Welcome to The Vault. Tune in every week to unlock the marketing secrets of some of the fastest growing businesses. You'll hear practical tips, strategies, and case studies that'll help you build incredible marketing campaigns for your business. And now, here's your host, Stacey Keogh.
Welcome to The Vault Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Keogh. Before we get started today, I wanted to remind you all about our content creation workshop taking place on the 25th of January in London. You'll learn the fundamentals of digital marketing that can be applied to any business, starting with the creation of your digital content to ensure that your online efforts are cohesive, coordinated, and attract the right type of customers to your brand. I've been getting a few questions about the day, so I thought I'd just quickly cover off a few things. The first question that came in was, what level should you be at your business in order to attend this workshop? Now, ideally, you should be a business owner or someone in need of producing content for a business. Now, your marketing budget doesn't need to be huge, but you should have or be part of an operating business seeking knowledge on how to plan and implement your own content strategy. The other question I keep getting is what's actually included in the day? And this is very cool because what you'll actually walk away with is quite a few things. So a documented content creation strategy, a complete customer avatar or a buying persona, which you've heard me talk lots about on this podcast before, a really strong understanding of how to connect to your audience and improve your engagement rates, the skills to create multiple forms of content, some ideas and tips on creating your own juicy lead magnets, crucial tools to support your content creation plan. And that's really effective for me in my business. There'll be heaps of ideas and ninja tactics if you're an advanced content creator. We'll also have a photographer there, so you'll walk away with a professional headshot and some editorial photos to use in your content. You'll also have a videographer there, so you're going to get 1 to 2 minute ready to share professionally recorded videos. So that really gets you started on your content creation process. You'll also get some templates that will serve as reference to bring your digital marketing to life. So if you're interested in the event, check the show notes for the Eventbrite link to book your place. Now, today's episode is all about company culture. I know we're not actually talking about digital marketing today, but this is something that I get a lot of questions about. Clients see our company culture and ask us lots of questions about it, and I can see why. The workplace is where you spend more than a third of your life. Do your employees wake up every day and look forward to a day of work, or do they drag themselves to the office counting the days to the weekend? Do they feel the same sense of ownership and dedication towards the business just like you do? Only a place that values human resource, treats employees with trust, and instills a sense of confidence and cohesion amongst the workers will achieve a great company culture. Employee incentives and appraisals might not always be enough to motivate an employee to work for the best outcome for your business. Sometimes in extremely challenging circumstances, when a collective endeavor is required to save the day for your business, it is the love and the affection employees feel towards their workplace that turns out to be the decisive factor. There's no single benchmark for a great company culture. Every business is different, but you will need a consistent and strong set of values if you want to remain competitive in the near future, because this is something that's only going to become more important. These are really hard lessons that I've had to learn through growing my business. Once upon a time, I didn't give company culture any thought, but it was through hiring and firing, recruiting great talent, overcoming challenges, and actually asking my team what they want from a workplace that over the last few years, I've begun to take my business in a totally different direction. In this episode, I've asked a few members of my team to join me and discuss company culture, core values, and what is really important to the millennial workforce. So listen in and let's open the vault that is Brandlective Communications company culture. Cool. Let's just kick things off straight away. Go ahead, Bryony, with your questions.
Hey, so what does company culture actually mean?
I'd say company culture is the personality of a business. So what makes some places great to work and what makes others a bit more toxic.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I think that, like, naturally, as people, we tend to gravitate towards, you know, positive experiences, positive people, positive environments. And it's just about, like, a good company culture is something that's, you know, about you want to feel involved, you want to feel that you're part of something, you know, working towards a bigger sort of goal, and you don't want to feel like you're being, you know, attacked, like toxic culture. You don't want to feel like you're being attacked by people who are meant to be on your team.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, that's
company
to me.
But company culture can be negative. So it's not to say that it's always positive, but I suppose the ambition is that company culture should be positive.
I think if company culture is negative, then you need to shut down. What's the point? Like, who wants to, why would you, that's not an accolade. That's not something to be proud of.
No, but the question is, what is it? What is company culture? So I guess company culture really is the environment, right? It can be positive, yeah. It can be negative, it can be grumpy, it can be exciting, it can be fast paced, it can be, yeah. It's just the environment or the sort of ecosystem that you create. And I think I agree, obviously, it's better to have a positive culture for sure. People respond to positive environments, positive situations. Like, the environment that you're within sort of dictates how you think, how you act, how you feel, how you perform. So I think that's sort of the, I guess, why company culture is super important.
It's like your experience with that company outside of your job role, right? It's all the little things that maybe add up to create a bigger impression of, you know, that company. I think maybe if you've been very fortunate and worked in good companies, you might kind of take it for granted. But if you've had a bad experience, I'm sure in your next job is going to be like a major, you know, thing that you're looking out for. Like, when you're looking at companies and you're applying for jobs, is, you know, what is their company culture? What, you know, what do they stand for?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's something that I definitely learned, like, especially moving to London. I learned, like, my first job, I didn't even think about asking about their company culture. But the more you get some experience behind you, you're just looking for so much more. Like, and it's the stuff that you feel confident about asking in interviews, like, you know. And I think people's responses say a lot, like, about that question. Like, what's your company culture like? I think you can always gauge what people are like when they respond.
Yeah.
To the question.
Completely.
Okay. So why is culture so important?
It goes across, like, anything, really. Like, you know, whether your sort of ethnic culture or, like, you know, company culture. Culture is, it's a identity, really. It's like part, it's ingrained in people. It's something that, you know, a lot of people are proud of. And especially when it comes to business, like, company culture is something that, you know, a lot of, if done well, it's amazing. And I'm sure, again, people have experiences of, you know, when it's not been done well. And I sort of read a really interesting stat that 90% of employees said that positive work experiences mattered the most to them, closely followed by, like, flexible working and remote working. So then I just thought that that's really interesting, that 97% of a workforce think that culture is by far the most important thing. And I just thought that was really interesting.
Mm, yeah, definitely. I think the thing about culture is, or I guess the reason it's important, is it does influence your entire life, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Work, how many hours of your life do you spend working?
Yeah.
I think also it's important because for the employers themselves, in the sense that they might have, you know, a smaller team or less fashionable clients than another business. But if their culture is better, they're able to, you know, retain their top talent versus a bigger company, then, you know, they're gaining a competitive advantage with less resources.
Totally. And I think overall it just influences the way that you behave everywhere in life. Like, the people that you work with influence your views. You know, we have conversations in the office all the time, and where sometimes we agree on things, sometimes we don't, but it definitely instills, like, our views on different things outside of the workplace, you know, whether it's politics or whether it's religion or maybe even not that important of a subject. It could be anything. And it does influence the way that you think, and it gives you different perspective, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on, let's talk about millennials. What are their expectations, and how has this influenced business attitudes towards culture?
So as Rachel said a minute ago, I think that company culture is becoming a real big decision maker for people, specifically when they're looking for new jobs. So as a millennial myself, I have had some retail jobs at companies that shall not be named, where the company culture wasn't there. It was the type of thing where you get that Sunday night feeling that people moan about on Facebook, where you don't want to get up in the morning. But if you have a job where the company culture is great and it's fantastic, you like getting up Monday morning. And I think that's what millennials care about now.
Like they've got a bigger choice than any other generation in terms of the job market for the UK anyway. There's more jobs than there are qualified candidates. So they're in a fortunate position to some extent where they can be a little bit more fussy. And I think, you know, there's been a growing movement with, you know, social responsibility and things like that. They very much are choosing jobs, if they're able to, that they kind of can align themselves to, as you said, because there is such a big choice that they can almost be a bit picky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you don't have an appealing company culture, then you're potentially losing good talent, as you said, Alex. Like, it's, you know, there's a recruitment war sort of going on at the moment, isn't there? It's not like 10 years ago when we were in the middle of a recession and there was no jobs, where, you know, businesses could probably get away with not investing in culture and making work environments seem really positive. So I think the economy has changed. And I guess I'm trying to decide whether it is a millennial thing or not. Like, weirdly, I just realized we're, everybody actually in our business, I think, is a millennial.
Yeah.
All of us, right?
Yeah. Even me. Zoe is our only.
Oh, yeah. Not, yes, we do have one generation Z.
Zed. Gen Z.
Zed for Zoe, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess I'm trying to think whether our perspective is realistic.
Though, Zoe is so mature that she is like a millennial. It doesn't really make a difference. But one thing I thought, and again, I'm coming in with another stat, I found out that nearly 80% of millennials look for company culture and like fit for like their employees over career progression, which I thought was crazy. Oh, wow. So 80% of millennials would prefer an environment that's like fun and they get on with the people over whether it's going to...
Career.
That's so weird. So for me, as the owner of a business, I actually find that a bit depressing. Because I think, so you only want to join the company because it's a fun place to work. I mean, that's great. Mm. I mean, I'm making an assumption here that we all think Brightwell is a really fun place to work. But I don't know if I like that stat. I think it's kind of, I think that's a bit depressing. I just think, oh, so people join the company just for the environment, not because they want to achieve things within the business, not because they want to progress, not because they want to serve clients in a really great way.
I think I disagree. I think it goes hand in hand. I think if you're happy in the company, you're way more likely to want to see it.
That's true. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with that.
That has a, that's complete, that's directly, I don't think it's as black and white as, you know, just wanting to think it's like some sort of social, just get paid to hang out with your friends. Yeah. I think, you know, millennials are focused and they do want, they know what they want. Like they, I think I also read another stat. I don't know what the exact percentage is, but millennials are like the first generation of people who, you know, CSR is something like corporate social responsibility is really important to them. Like they want to work for a company that stands for something and means something and is working towards like a greater good. And I think, you know, that's just standard for them. And hand in hand would go, you know, a great environment. And then they'd feel like more power. It's more power in people, I guess. If you're with people who are like-minded, you're going to be more likely to want to drive something into success.
I don't know if this is just a millennial thing, but maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, putting like a table tennis table in like the, you know, the staff room or whatever it might be, that's kind of just naturally progressed into, you know, more meaningful things. And I'm not sure if that is, if millennials can take complete credit for that. That's just a wider social responsibility issue. I think they realize that these are not actual things that are affecting culture. People want, you know, things that are going to be helping the environment, all these movements that are going on, like empowering women, gender equality. Like it's, I think it's just a brush to say, oh, this is a millennial thing or a Gen Z thing.
Yeah. I think it's a first world thing.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, completely.
You know, I think it's one of those, you know, if we think back to 2 generations ago, which was our grandparents that were dealing with war, that they, you know, didn't necessarily have the scope to be able to consider the impact they make socially, environmentally, economically. Yeah. I just think that was, they were very in a moment, you know? Mm. And because the last 2 generations, we haven't had to deal with that in a first world country. Obviously, that is still happening in other parts of the world. But because that's not happening to us in Britain, necessarily, that we have the scope to be able to think bigger and perhaps are just searching for more meaning.
Survive and thrive.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I have a question about this then. So how much, as this is a random question I'm throwing in here, but how much does the Brandlective attitude towards giving corporate social responsibility, how much does that impact the way that you guys feel about working here?
For me, a lot, I'd say. I've mentioned to my friends outside of work about our corporate responsibility program, and they're always really interested. The majority of my friends are also millennials, so I think it speaks for the generation that they're always interested in it and they want to ask me more about it and they want to know what we're doing.
Mm.
Every time after we have a brainstorming session on how we can do more, my housemates, for example, always want to know what went on.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny. So because that's not happening in their workplaces?
I think so, yeah. Because they work for bigger corporations. I don't know if that makes a difference, but they haven't got anything specifically in place like we have.
Mm, so maybe that's because if you're working for a big corporate, most do have CSR policies in place. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just that it doesn't trickle down.
Yeah.
They that's don't really funny. Have a say in it, though, do they?
Right.
A lot of these times.
Right, that's true.
Like I like the CSR program at Brandlective because we can chip in and put our ideas forward and you kind of can put your own stamp on the giving aspect of it, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas if it was a massive company, they have, you know, quite rigid structures in place.
Dictating yeah. to you what's going to happen.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess it makes you feel good that, you know, they might be making larger impact because they're donating more money or whatever. But with giving back, it has to kind of resonate with you. And I think it's far more powerful. And you think about it more on a day-to-day basis. Like even last week, for example, you know, like on a Friday and, you know, you wake up Saturday morning, like, oh, okay, actually, you know, when you have time and you're not head down focusing on your work, you can reflect back and you, okay, you know, some of the work I did today is gone to help someone in a faraway country. And you can reflect on it a bit more, I think.
Yeah.
It means more to you.
So I guess to explain a little bit about what Alex is talking about there to our listeners is we have a policy in place that every time we perform a task internally within our business, we donate or we make an impact in some way in another part of the world. So we've got policy set up with charities in Cambodia and Kenya, and there's lots of different projects in Borneo and, you know, all sorts of places around the world, where small actions that happen every day. So for example, for every 30-day contract that we complete with a client, we give 30 days worth of access to clean drinking water to families in Cambodia. For every new website we develop, we give 2 days worth of business training to women in East Africa. So there's quite a few different things like that that we do. For example, it's someone's birthday, we plant a tree in Borneo to help support the orangutans and to rehabilitate their environment. So we try to align, I guess, within our culture here, and specifically our CSR policy, is to align our everyday activities with something positive that's going to something bigger. And they are really small little micro impacts, you know, that they're really, really minuscule things. But I guess our belief is that in the long term, they add up to bigger, greater things. So just a little side note there to explain a little bit more about what Alex was meaning about waking up on a Saturday and thinking about the awesome things that he's done that week.
Okay, so how does a startup economy impact the need for companies to define culture?
I feel this comes back to the amount of millennials and Gen Zers that are working in startups and the appeal of startups. They're able to take talent away from bigger companies that maybe have all kinds of grad schemes because they have policies and a work-life balance that includes things that these people are looking for. I think it's important for them to define this culture because there's so many different examples of, you know, company culture. And I think it really depends on what role these people are going to be doing, you know, what industry it's in. I think it's all the little things that add up outside of the job spec as well. It's really difficult to just focus on one area. And I think that's why they maybe they're struggling to define it.
Yeah, culture's a really difficult thing to grasp because it's an intangible thing, isn't it? It's it's not a thing that you can hold in your hand and understand exactly what it is. It's like a feeling and a movement and an environment, and that's really difficult to explain. I think in terms of, you know, the startup economy, obviously it's cool now to be an entrepreneur, right? Like loads of people start businesses. It's the thing to do.
The new rock star.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are becoming an entrepreneur to make the world a better place.
Yeah. Right. People are aligning it with something social for sure. But I suppose the thing is with people that are starting businesses, like they now have access to things that, again, a generation ago, people would never have had access to, just with the internet, for example. Digital marketing is obviously what we do. Like that impacts businesses significantly. So things can move really quickly. Things can develop and progress really, really quickly, but they can also fail really quickly too. So I think, you know, culture is one of those things that's really important for a business to define early on, because if you do have high growth, it can quickly get out of control. If you don't have anything in place, it can impact whether your business succeeds or not, right? Because as you've mentioned, Alex, like you attract that kind of talent into your business because of culture.
Yeah.
I think the flip side to that is, there are a lot of jobs out there right now. It's not a depressed economy. People can find work. So people have more choice. So they're then looking at more than just what are my tasks and what am I going to earn? It's much more than that. So I think in order for a small business or a little startup, if we're talking about like the startup economy, if you're a startup business, how do you attract really great talent into your business if you can't offer the same financial rewards as a huge corporation? And I think the way that you can do that is culture.
Culture, yeah. Perks. Yeah. Places like WeWork spring to mind instantly for me. We like those co-working spaces where it's just, you know, all a whole bunch of like small startups who, you know, they're young millennials. And, you know, they have just beer on tap. They have like, they have events like, like literally weekly events where they have food. Like the whole thing is like wanting to keep people in the workplace. Like, you know, they realize that that's the sort of things that young people value. And in turn for that, it's going to be, you know, you're going to get a productive team. And, you know, like areas where, you know, where is it? Like Ticketmaster, who have like a slide in their like office or something. Like it's just crazy things like that, that people, you know, implement to think, oh, actually, if you have people who can, you know, let their hair down in the office space, they're going to be a lot more like in a better frame of mind to give you what you want, basically.
Yeah.
So why do you think the focus is so much on this younger generation? Like if I'm, you know, 65, I don't want to go down a slide.
Well, I think it's got a lot to do with the job market. I think because there's so much, so it's become a buzzword, like company culture. And I think the more that it's a saturated, all these businesses are saying that, you know, we have a superior company culture, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's important to define it because you can carve your own niche in the job market with culture. You can, there's so much of it, but how is your culture different? So instead of just defining it, they need to like differentiate themselves with it as well.
Yeah.
So it's quite a big focus on it that way.
Is it not because millennials are going to be the biggest generation in the workforce by like 2020 or something like that? And their expectations on culture are huge. So companies have to evolve and create that culture.
Yeah. And they're going to be our future, you know, bosses. They're going to be the future leaders. They're going to be, you know, eventually 65-year-olds are going to, they're close to retiring. So, you know, there's only a really small amount that you're going to be able to get out of them. But millennials, they've still got, 40, 50 years potentially of work out for them. So you need to get it in, your foundations in at the grassroots. See, even your dog agrees. That's just what you need to do. Like, you need to hook them in.
So how can businesses evaluate company culture?
One is theory. I mean, how is it written down? Is it recorded somewhere? I think there's also, you know, how well do your team actually understand it? And then also the implementation side of it. So is there consistency? Is it talked about all the time? Like, how do you actually enforce, like, live and breathe core values in company culture? So maybe we should start by talking a little bit about what are our core values? Does everybody know?
Yeah.
So be bold.
Yep. Use credibility.
License success.
Empower others.
Cultivate adventure.
Good job, guys.
Give ourselves a pat on the back.
Well, that's good. So everybody knows them. And I guess, how does everybody know them?
I think it helps that we have them up in the office, and we talk about them a lot. I mean, every day, like, you know, on our weekly calls, we talk about them. And I think we're really good at weaving them into every day at work.
Yeah, so we do a team call every Tuesday. And I suppose what we try to do at the end of every one of those calls is end it with giving a shout out to someone on the team who has lived one of our core values. And we just try to give them credit for that. But you guys are actually pretty good at doing this within our team WhatsApp group as well. You guys give each other shout outs and, mm-hmm. and relate them back to our core values, don't you?
Yeah. If someone's kind of gone above and beyond to help out the team, it's just a nice way of saying thank you. And obviously, it's the fact that we've created good brand values or company culture values to start with, because we're all aligned them in that way. So it makes it quite easy.
So would you, I'm going to throw you on the spot. What, these five core values that we have within BrandLactive, what do they mean? So we know what they are, but what do they mean? So the first one's like, be bold. That's our first value.
Yeah.
So with be bold, an example I'd say is when, for example, one of us is talking to a client and it's having the confidence to put ideas out there and suggest things to them and just be bold with your decision making.
Yeah, we like the our definition is we're not afraid to take risks and we want to get noticed. Like, we want to put ourselves out there. You know, one of the things that I always hear Stacey say is to clients when it comes to creating content or of anything, really, she's always like, you know, how edgy do you want to go? How controversial do you want to be? And I guess that's a really good pointer, really, because then that gives us the confidence to be like, yeah, guys, like, totally just, you know, be controversial. That's how you're going to stand apart. But that'll be your USP, really.
Yeah, I suppose that kind of relates to the type of businesses we work with too, right? Like, we like to work with quite disruptive businesses, with brands that are quite bold. We try to give a lot of personality to brands and the tone of voice and their all the content that we produce for them. So I guess that's how we relate it back to our first one, which is be bold. So what's the next one?
Ooze credibility. So I think it's just about being honest with yourself, and if you make a mistake, kind of own up to it, because, you know, everyone makes mistakes, and I think it's kind of the best way to learn from it, and that we've created an environment where no one is really afraid to make mistakes. So the chances are of success are much higher because you've kind of learned from those mistakes, and it's a nice environment to work in. So I think just communicating that so regularly is really important. I think some people lose track of that sometimes and it becomes a bit of a blame culture, but we don't really have that here, and it's definitely quite a good part of life at BrandLactive.
That's kind of my favorite core value. I like how it sounds. Ooze. Yeah. It's very oozy.
That's a strong no. We also have a no-no list. So we have a list on we've got a list of words that we like to use and a list that we don't like.
Well, ooze can't go on it because it's one of our core values.
I know, but the connotation of ooze can definitely
go on it. It's a close call, that.
Yeah, it's really just about being ourselves, right? Like,
striving for authenticity.
Yeah, it's okay to be less than perfect. Nobody is perfect. So I think that's what it's really about. It's about authenticity, about being credible, just being your true self.
Yeah. Can I take our next one? Because Stacey said that ooze credibility is her favourite. And the next one, empower others, is my favourite, definitely. Like, I really enjoy the, you know, supporting side of things. I like to see people grow, and, you know, they start off really shy and then they finish like really confident. And I love seeing that process and helping get there and, you know, helping people develop. And I guess that's, you know, for us, empower others is really important. You know, we're a small team and we've got big ambitions. And in order to get that across, we really think it's really important at all times to support each other and, you know, look at what we want to do and how we want to get there and just make it happen. And I think, you know, that core value is really important for helping.
It's really about lifting people up. It's about, you know, us wanting to be these lifelong learners and continuing to grow as people and as a business. So I think that's a big part of empower others.
I think that one's particularly important as well when we have people that aren't necessarily in the office every day and have remote workers. It's good to keep them involved and empower them when they may not be in the office every single day.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah. Right, who wants to talk about what's the next one? Cultivate adventure.
That's my favorite one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's similar in some ways to being bold, but it's kind of putting the roadmap out there for it. So we defined it as sort of thinking outside the box, trying new things and pushing boundaries. And I guess the way I view it is, if you have a good idea, like, you can run with it. Mm. I think It's really important to support people and their ideas. If we think it's a good one, if it's a bad one, it's important that people can kind of learn that way and experiment.
Mm.
Especially with, you know, small business environments, you often get more creative freedom as such. I think it's important to, you know, be, you know, a supporter of that mentality. And then also, I guess, is accepting difficult things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some adventures are challenging and difficult, right? So it's, again, you know, just quite a well-rounded.
And there's all, I think the, you know, the want to do well and go above and beyond is so strong in the team that, you know, the sort of we accept every challenge part of the cultivating adventure is, you know, we always say that if someone gives us a task and we're like, we don't know how to do it, we're like, yeah, we can do it. And then you figure it out later. And then you'll literally dedicate your like whole life to figuring out how to deliver it in the best possible way. And I think that's something that we, you know, we do really well. And we always, always like accept every single challenge that comes to us. And we're like, yeah, we'll figure it out. And we know that.
I think that leads quite nicely into our fifth core value, which is licensed success.
I think this is the toughest one because it can mean so many different things. Like it's success for yourself, success for the clients, so they're all kind of connected.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like that's what led us into defining that one, right? So I remember when we were discussing core values as a team and we were trying to decide like what are our core values and what should they mean? And I remember this one being challenging, but it's really, really important one. So, and I remember coming up with that word license. So to license success, because what does success mean to you? And it could be something that's different to another person, you know? Mm-hmm. So each one of our clients defines success differently, right? So if we're running a marketing campaign or we're developing a brand or we're building a website or whatever it might be that we're implementing for a client, like their, what they define as success is going to be different. So I think that's where that sort of language came from, I suppose. It's just licensed success. It's really about embracing their version of success and then working relentlessly really to try to achieve it for them. So I guess we've kind of talked a little bit about, you know, what they are and how, and, you know, a little bit about how much we understand them and what they stand for us, which I think is cool. What about consistency? You know, like how do we make sure that we live and breathe our core values? You know, what are we doing to infiltrate that kind of into our business?
I think, as we briefly mentioned before, we reference them quite a lot. And I think that's important, especially for small businesses where everyone has an impact on core values. It's important to keep talking about them because they do evolve and they do develop, and that's okay. And I think that's a really big part of it.
I think also another good thing is I think you calling each other out, like, I think that's really important. If you, like, that's part of coaching and it's part of, you know, supporting each other to be the best possible people that we can be, best possible workers. And if you see that someone is not, you know, adhering to the core values, and you call them out about it, you're like, that's not being supportive. That's not, you know, you can push yourself a bit more to be bold. You can push yourself a bit more to, you know, or just own your success. Like, it's just any, just holding each other accountable for it. I think we do quite well.
Yeah, it makes it real instead of just being like on a piece of paper saying, here are our core values. If you are calling people out and like celebrating successes people have had and like attributing it back to the core values, then you can kind of see it in practice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. One thing I've seen, like, obviously Rach, you as the operations manager, one thing that you introduced was those quarterly catch-ups as well with each team member.
Mm.
So maybe explain a little bit about how that works.
Yeah. So for me, I just thought, you know, it's really important when you start a company and, you know, you're just learning everything and you're trying to get it all in and you're juggling a lot of, you know, balls as it is, like you're trying to keep everyone happy. It's really easy to forget how far you've come and it's easy to forget how much you've learned. Like, you know, when I started, I wouldn't have thought that I was creative at all when it comes to like imagery. And now I'm like, I've learned how to do InDesign. I'm designing like our magazine. And that to me is crazy because I would never have like never thought that I could do InDesign. And I think it's really it's really important for everyone to realize like how far you've come and, you know, look to the future as well. So for me, the quarterly sort of meetings were a good chance to, you know, just look back at your past successes and things that you've done well, celebrate them, things that you could improve on, and get the team's perspective on that as well. So So we use, you know, peer-to-peer feedback and, you know, everyone chips in and it's all anonymous, so you don't have to make it awkward. But, you know, everyone just chips in and says, you know, this is what I think this person is great at. This is what this person needs to improve. And then we just discuss it. We discuss it with each team member. And then, you know, we really work together to try and making sure that, you know, it's something that they are going to work on. And the good stuff, they're going to continue to, you know, build on that and build their skills. And it's just a really good way to reflect and also like plan for the future. So you yourself feel that you're always growing, but yeah, you're also, you know, continuously working on the things that you're a bit.
Yeah. And I think what was cool about that is you've linked a lot of the feedback to our core values. So I've seen you benchmark. I think one of the questions you always ask everybody is, how have you lived our core values in the last quarter? Yeah. And you've always asked them, you know, how do they rate themselves? I think it's like 1 out of 10 or something. Yeah. And then also you take it one step further where you're asking them how, like, yeah, what did you actually do that, yeah, was
give
bold?
Me an example.
Giving me an example of how you empowered others. How did you use credibility? So yeah, it really does get the whole team thinking about how they are living them. Yeah. And I guess embedding that into what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then the other part of that is those peer-to-peer feedback that you mentioned. You're also asking each member of the team to benchmark everybody against those core values too.
Yeah.
So that's really helpful for an individual, like even for myself, like we still do this for me, like everybody benchmarks me as the founder, and it's like, oh, nerve-wracking to see like how everybody gives me feedback. But it is great because, you know, I can think, oh, I'm living this core value really well where I'm empowering others. Mm-hmm. But if everybody doesn't feel that way,
yeah,
and I get that feedback through that process, then that's really helpful and that can help me become a better leader, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the same thing, like maybe I do think I'm being really bold and crazy and out there and coming up with all these ideas, and everyone's like, actually, like, what's
happening? You're playing it kind of
safe. Yeah, like, last quarter was like, you know, there's nothing really crazy that you did at all. So, you know, I think it really does help to look at that regularly. And then I also think, as you mentioned, Rachel, like to be reflecting on how far you've come, because it's really easy to get bogged down in work on a day-to-day basis and think, okay, this is what I'm doing every day. I'm doing what I, you know, here's my task list, working mm-hmm. through it, you know, in the office, out the office, you know, bang, 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 and it's done.
Checking boxes.
Yeah. And you don't really remember that actually, you know, the review that we did 2 quarters ago that you didn't even, or you gave the example of it, you didn't even use InDesign.
No, that's right.
Or, you know, we were talking about this a little bit about Lucy earlier. Like, Lucy is so great at like putting really bold ideas out there. But if we go back to a year ago, I always thought Lucy was shy.
I contest this. Lucy was shy, but you know.
She did hold back with her ideas, like you did. And that's something that you've come into it and you've really lived that core value, and you're always putting ideas out there now, and they're always such great ideas. But you can see how far, you know, like if you went back and looked at what the reviews were 12 months ago,
yeah,
I'm sure you see like a massive difference. It's not to say that anything was ever negative or bad. It's just how you've developed.
It's just how you've grown.
I think it's just a cool thing to look at.
Yeah.
I think it does help that they're not rules. They're more like guidelines.
Mm.
And it's quite a lot of, you know, as we've mentioned, sort of they're a product of co-creation and collaboration, you know, and I feel like it makes people part of it more rather than being told, oh, you know, you have to be bold. It's kind of like, oh, this is how you can do it. And this is how it will make it better. It's just a nicer environment, I think, than kind of being told what to do.
Mm.
Which is that our rebellious nature to rebel against being told what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We've got another question for us, Bryony.
Yeah, so some of today's most successful corporate cultures also take a values first approach. How is this the right thing for a small business?
So when hiring new people for the team, yeah, I think culture is really important to us here. Like it's something that as I meet people, I'm always thinking about, okay, we've got to look at their skill set. Do they have the skills to be able to perform the work that we carry out here at Brandlective? You know, do they have those skills? That's obviously important when you're hiring people. But I think people's personalities and also, I guess, actually more so attitude towards work is something that's really important to me. People do ask questions about our culture, and I will try to give them a really great insight into what it's like, because I think we've worked really hard on establishing our culture, and it's, as you know, we mentioned earlier, it is evolving. It's always changing. We're always trying to improve things. Nothing's perfect. Like we're always, you know, trying to progress it and all that kind of thing. But it is really important to me that, you know, values are a huge part of that hiring process, because if I'm interviewing somebody for a role and they come off a bit like a selfish individual, then I know that they're going to struggle with that core value of empowering others. Or if they are super, super shy and don't have, you know, aren't really great at putting ideas out there all the time, maybe they aren't going to be bold. And I wouldn't say it's a make or break with regards to hiring, but I certainly use them as guidelines.
Yeah, you're more conscious of it because you don't want to sort of disturb the equilibrium, you know, totally. Or upset the apple cart with someone that's a little bit too, you know, it's good having different personalities, but I think there is kind of a cutting point where this person is going to maybe like upset the company culture.
Totally. And I think it's less about personality. Like, I think we have really individual personalities here. Like, everybody is very, very different, but we all strive towards wanting to achieve the same thing. And I think we all have mutual respect for our clients, for the line of work that we do, for the business, for our core values. I think that's a big part of it, right? Like, if people are on board with that, I think that's what's really, really important.
I think another thing we do as well is, you know, the whole talent dynamics as well. Like, we all like evaluate each other, you know, as we join, we evaluate and see, you know, what type of people we are.
Yeah, so like, not evaluate each other, but we do a
like an evaluation of ourselves, like,
yeah, so everybody takes a test. It's like what do we call it? A psychometric.
Yeah.
So we do a psychometric test where people answer questionnaire.
Yeah.
And then we can understand the type of person they are, the type of way that they perform and how they like to work and how they receive feedback, and that's been huge.
Yeah, actually. That's really, and for me, I always, especially when I'm like looking at, because it's so easy when you're coaching someone or trying to oversee people, it's really easy to just judge them on how you work and how you think.
Yeah.
And then for me, I always look at all of our team's profiles regularly just to be like, okay, if I'm frustrated, is it because I'm frustrated, like, because this is how I would do it? Or is it because, you know, they just need to be coached in a completely different way?
Yeah,
and that keeps me, you know, that helps me to understand the team a lot easier, because I'm like, you know, that's not how I would do it, but that's how they need to be coached. So, you know, and that's good for me too, because it means that I don't just have a set system on how to coach people.
I think that's a good point, because actually, if I go back to what our culture was 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when we first started out, I wouldn't say we had a great culture. I don't think it was a really fun and interesting and supportive environment. Not to say it was really negative. It wasn't that. I just don't think we had, I don't know if we had a culture. Maybe that was part of it. And I think the psychometric testing has really changed things for us, because it just means that we do look at people differently. We know that everybody has different strengths. Weaknesses are not so important for us. It's just about empowering others in the areas that they are strong in. And then also understanding that not everybody, as Rachel said, like, performs the same way. So it really just has changed the way that we recruit people, really, and help to coach people within the team. What other kind of things are we doing within our business that helps us to infiltrate all of those core values and our vision and our purpose and all that kind of thing?
Like, we have strategy days. Yeah, I guess it's just for us to regroup and, just refocus our goals and what we all want to get out of the company and where we want it to go and how we're going to get there. So it really is just, you know, a time for us all to just sit in a lovely hotel and, plan that sort of, yeah, I guess the next quarter of, you know, ways that we're always trying to improve our services, our packages, what we do for our clients. And our core values are the sort of, that is the agenda, isn't it, really? Like, what can we do next that is going to be bold, that is going to be, you know, license and success? That's our agenda of how we plan for the next.
Yeah. And I think we haven't always done them quarterly. You know, we started off doing team days annually, and then we introduced, the team day was always something really fun, and we always went out and did something as a group. And then we introduced doing a strategy day each year. And then it's just this year that we've decided to implement that quarterly, so that now we've got 3 strategy days a year, and then one really fun team event. So let's start with team events. Like, what's our most fun thing that we've ever done?
It would have to be the
going out in the wild with Steve. Sorry, but I loved it. Like, everything about that day was, in my mind, everything that I would absolutely hate. Going outside, being in the countryside.
In the rain.
Like, in the rain.
Oh, it was raining, yeah.
In the woods, like, survival skills. It's like, everything on paper, if you listed it out, would be something that I'd always say no to.
Yeah, so we did a survive, what was it called? Survive and Thrive in the wild. So that we can survive and thrive in business. So it was really cool. Yeah, so we went out to the wild and learned survival skills.
Yeah. Very cool. We learned how to make fire.
And we always do this in the middle of summer, but this year, the only day that it rained in this summer was that day.
Yeah, I know. And then the minute we've been it, we got out of the woods. It was beautiful.
That's true, yeah. We ended up in the bottom.
But yeah, it was so good. Like, it was really, it was...
What was good about the day? What specifically?
I think it got people to come out of their comfort zones a little bit.
Yeah.
And just, again, it kind of falls back to the early point you made about sort of co-creation and collaboration. The fact that, okay, we're doing this as a joint activity and, you know, it's kind of, there's someone else who's running it and we're just participating, but just kind of doing these things together, I think it just helps team bonding. Which is really important for company culture. Maybe when you're in the office setting, you don't really think about it too much because you've got, you know, your to-do list or whatever to crack on with, but it is an important thing that's always kind of underlying.
Yeah, I suppose we did quite mixed activities too, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And I think all of the team came away feeling like reinvigorated and like focused. Like, even one of the girls were like, oh, you know, I feel like it just sort of revamped her way of thinking. She was like, oh, you know, it really has like refocused me and I was feeling a bit disconnected and now I'm like, you know, back and ready to, you know, really take opportunities that we have to offer. And that was really good feedback.
I think you get that from doing stuff you don't usually do, like going out of your comfort zone. It makes you think
totally differently.
Yeah, it really
life
does.
In general.
Yeah, I know.
Right, it's funny that, isn't it? One day.
Yeah,
one day in the wild.
Like, I've probably thought about that day every single day since we went there.
Really?
Like, in different ways. Yeah, we talk about it a lot. We talk about Steve a lot. Like, shout out to Steve. Like, he was great.
He was
just really good at, like, he obviously has a mixed background. Like, his passion is obviously, you know, survival skills and, like, you know, thriving in the wild and nature. That's obviously his passion. But he comes from a super corporate background. And what made it great was the fact that he completely did, like, relate. He understood, like, how businesses work. He understood everything about it. And he translated it so well into, you know, his passion. And I guess his passion did sort of come out through us. Like, it was so contagious. Like, I don't really care about nature. Like, what? No, I do, obviously. I'm from the countryside.
Disclosure, Rachel's the only one that feels this way about the countryside.
a beach, I'm there. That's my type of nature. Like, fields, not so much.
Got a lot of angry farmers.
You guys, you're doing great, but no, not for me. But
no, it was fun.
It was good.
What else have we done over the years?
Christmas parties?
Oh, yeah, Christmas parties. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Even Christmas
though, like, on paper it might sound like quite standard, we always kind of try and do something cool, go somewhere with a different theme, you know.
Yeah,
maybe we have, like, ask people like what they're into and we do like a vote and stuff. So again, it's not something that's like handed to you, you have a big say. And
yeah, that's true. Yeah, we do run that out past the team and everybody decides which, you know, which themed party we want to do this year.
Yeah. We run it as a democracy.
Yeah,
not a dictatorship.
I think that's important for culture, right?
Yeah,
I'd say
that's true.
Yeah. The strategy days too, like, we, you know, there is some planning that goes into that in terms of trying to think, how do we explain all of the new things that are happening within the business to everybody? Because as we mentioned earlier, we do have a lot of remote workers, part-timers, freelancers that, you know, are not in our office, for example, every single day. And so the purpose, obviously, of that day for us is really trying to get the message out to the whole, everybody that's involved within Brilactive, whether you are just a copyright freelancer that we work with, you know, a couple of times a month, or you are working full time, that everybody's on the same page as to, one, the direction of the business, two, the different things that we're planning to implement over the next quarter and beyond. You know, sometimes we're talking over the next 12 months. I find it just a really good way of bringing the team together and getting everybody to focus on one thing, because I know we talk about things all the time throughout the week, or every, you know, every team meeting we do on a Tuesday, we always talk about things that are coming up. But it is really easy for everyone to be distracted and be thinking about the tasks they've got to do that day and, oh my gosh, all the things that are pending and that client they've got to call back, and they get distracted by sort of everyday distractions, I guess. Whereas when we have a focused day once a quarter where we're not doing any of the delivery work that we would normally do for our clients, whether it's websites, marketing, branding, anything like that, we're just completely focused on our business and what's going to be happening. And I think that really does, I've seen a big shift, I think, within the team since we started implementing those sorts of days.
We do. It just gives you a good opportunity to, you know, as you said, put all that, all the daily activities aside and really just get some perspective, I think, and think about, you know, you the look direction. At your own growth and you look at, you know, the company's growth as a whole. And then that's when you can see how you start to fit into all of that. And then, yeah, you're just free to implement it, I guess.
Yeah, it's good. All right. Well, we kind of need to wrap up the podcast for today. So I just want to say, well, thank you, team, for contributing and giving us your insights into just one as a whole, what culture feels like to you, why you think it's important in businesses. But then as we've kind of towards the end of this podcast, we've kind of got into us personally and what happens at Brandlactive. So hopefully our listeners appreciate and can take something away from listening to how we do things here. Even though we are a small business and we are still learning, we're doing our very best to try to create like a really good culture. So thanks all.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I know it was a little bit different, but I hope you enjoyed getting to know my team a little bit and just getting some insight into our company culture and how that has evolved over the last few years. I have three top attention grabbers that I want to talk about today. They're not necessarily things that came up during the podcast, but some of them are my learnings based on what's happened with my business and our culture over the last few years. So my first attention grabber is build a diverse team. So not a mirror image of yourself. And I've certainly been guilty of this, but no matter how good you are as a business owner, a high performing team can only be as successful as the sum of the people that you have in them. So if you don't have a great and diverse talent pool, your business won't be a success. So just remember to keep focus on that, to build a diverse team of people. Attention grabber number two is make it fun and create a safe and open environment. So as you heard on the podcast, we do a lot of team days. We've done that for the last 4 or 5 years now. They're always great fun. Everybody really enjoys it. We get to do something a little bit different outside of the office. But I think what's maybe more important when you're thinking about company culture is to think about inclusion. So you probably noticed from listening to a few of my team members that just being able to put their ideas out there, their options for their suggestions for different things, that level of inclusion is what kind of keeps them involved inside of the business. So it's asking them for input, asking them for feedback, and actually listening and implementing the ideas that they come up with. I find that works really, really well in terms of creating a great company culture. I also think it's really good to remember to praise people when credit is due and give them the recognition that they deserve. In terms of creating that sort of safe and open environment, enabling people to share ideas without fear of being laughed at. And I think that's really important. And sometimes I'll set up a conversation if we're having a brainstorm internally to just say, hey guys, like, don't shoot down any of the ideas that come up. Let's just write them all down. You never know what that's going to spark for somebody else. And it's just making sure that people don't ever feel nervous for putting ideas out there, that all ideas are great and they lead on to all sorts of accomplishments and new packages and services and just ideas for how we can deliver things to clients. So it's really about making, you know, a fun, safe, open environment where people feel really, really comfortable. Attention grabber number three, offer fair and strong leadership. So be loyal to your team members and they will return their loyalty and commitment to achieving the end goal. Often people focus on developing employees' weaknesses, but in my experience, people are much more successful when they instead focus on developing their strengths. Not everybody can be great at everything. So I think it's really important to understand who each of your team members are, what their strengths are. It is good to understand where their weaknesses are so you can plug those holes with other talent or through other members of the team.
And instead of trying to coach somebody to be better at things that they're naturally not good at or have a weakness for, I actually find that tends to dampen them and they don't seem to be as successful as they could be. So if my approach really is to develop their strengths, give them that confidence, that enthusiasm, really help them to grow the things they're really, really good at, and just use other talent to plug the holes of where those weaknesses are. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. This is really it from me. I'd love to hear what you think about company culture. So do feel free to message me on social media at The Vault Says or at Stacey Keogh UK. I look forward to you joining me next week for a really great interview that I've recorded with the amazing Sarah Millen Rowe. See you then.
You've just been listening to The Vault Podcast with Stacey Keogh. If you've enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.thevault.global for more free content that will help you build an effective marketing strategy.